So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today I have Mitch Kowalski, who has written a new book on the legal industry, and was introduced to him by Carl at Riverview Law that we featured in a previous interview. But first of all, Mitch, welcome.
Thank you.
So, what I would like to do with all of these things is actually start off and say, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and some of the work that you do?
What about Mitch Kowalski? Mitch Kowalski, I've been in the legal services industry for a little over 20 years. I was a solicitor with a large international firm for a while. Also worked at a mid-sized firm in Toronto, worked for a large title insurance company. I've been on my own. Been in-house counsel, so I've run the gamut of all sorts of legal services experiences. I do a lot of blogging now, legal blogging on innovation, and of course written the book, two kids, no animals.
So you mentioned the book, and it's called Avoiding Extinction, Reimagining Legal Services for the 21st Century.
Right.
So it's not all doom and gloom, is it?
It's a hopeful title.
Okay.
It's a hopeful title. It's about avoiding extinction. It's not about being extinct.
Tell us about it, because I think what's really interesting is that you've written it almost as a parable. It's like a novel in the style of, say, Eli Goldratt and The Goal. I don't know if you know that book, it's another book that's been written in the style of a novel. Was there a reason that you wrote it that way rather than writing it as a...
As a textbook.
Textbook or as a tome?
As a tome, yeah. Absolutely. My vision was, I'm writing about innovation.
Right.
So my view was, let's walk the walk.
Okay.
Right? So if I'm writing about innovation, maybe I should put it out in an innovative way. And so I came across the narrative concept. There's actually a quite well-known book in Canada called The Wealthy Barber, which is a narrative story about financial planning.
Okay.
And so that's where I got the idea. I said, wow, if I could turn that into a legal text, because I wanted people to actually read it.
Right.
I didn't want people to, read chapter one, say, that's very interesting, put it on their bookshelf and have it sit there forever.
Right.
I wanted to create something that would pull the reader in and pull them throughout the whole book. Because, the reason you write the book, there's many reasons, but I had a lot of things to say about the legal services industry that I was very critical of and I thought could do differently. But I also wanted people to read the book, and if they don't agree with me, at least that'll stimulate some thoughts of their own, saying, you know what, Kowalski doesn't really talk about here, but maybe we can twist that and turn it into something interesting. So you can only do that if you get people to read the whole thing through, hence the narrative style.
So it's as long as you get people to engage with the story, and therefore because you get engaged with the story, you become more emotionally connected to the story, and it's less easy to dismiss a story than it is to dismiss, an abstract concept.
Right.
Because ultimately, what we're talking about here, we're talking about change, right? And we're talking about radical change. We are talking about... some people may talk about dinosaurs and ice ages. That sort of change. I mean, not wanting to equate any law firms to dinosaurs or anything, but it's that sort of evolutionary sort of change that we are talking about in the legal market. I mean, what with particularly in the UK, the introduction of the ABSs in January, that which has sort of opened up the market. But this fundamentally challenges some of the stories that you talked about in the book, when it's coming from the general counsels or the people that are buying legal services, who are the customers, as it were, or the challenges that they're facing, but also the challenges that new entrants to the market are offering. I mean, Cracky, where do you start if you're an existing firm?
Well, a lot of it depends on the existing firm culture, the size of the firm. My view is, smaller firms have a better time of it because they're smaller, they're more nimble, they're more agile, whereas if you have a large firm of several hundred, it's going to be a long process because you have hundreds of people and maybe hundreds of partners that you have to then convince that change, the way we change things, is all for the better, and that's very difficult. So what I've always said to people who ask me this question is, you have to take baby steps. You have to pick pick one client.
Right.
And say, okay, this client, this is the experiment. This is our skunk works, okay? Lack of a better word of it. And so we're gonna try this out on this client and see how it works maybe with this practice group.
Right.
Or two practice groups. And that'll be the model. And then once we have some success there, that'll help you sell through to the rest of the firm. Say, look what we did for this client. Here's how the numbers shook out. Here's how the client is happy. Here's how the lawyers are happy. Now let's roll it out a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger.
But surely the challenge with some of that, and I think this is one of the challenges that many firms are going to have to sort of get around and find ways around. You talk about skunk works and things and separating out, if you like, a department or a division that does do things in a different way, which that maybe does offer sort of fixed price sort of services, you know, transparent sort of billing, uses technology to, you know, a much better and more efficient sort of way. What's interesting was the challenges is almost getting people to, if they're on this sort of the traditional track, it's like the partnership and the hourly billing sort of track, it seems to me that you almost have to create something absolutely separate, and if anything, put it in a separate building, in a way, in a separate office,
exactly.
Give it a different, it's almost hire some different people in a way, or actually get people to opt out of that system, because it's a very, very different culture.
Absolutely. It's a hugely different culture, and I think that's why in the book, the firm, the BFC firm, comes from another firm that blew up.
Yeah, sure.
And so that trauma, you know, when people are in traumatic situations, they're more apt to say, wow, what we thought was really the right model blew up on us. We're willing to change that.
Sure.
And so that was the reason why I worked in the book. But again, if you have an existing firm, you
almost have to start from scratch.
You have
as
to
well.
Start from scratch, and you have to separate out the group.
I don't know where that was, some sort of tooting of a train or something, a steam engine kind of outside, or something. We're just for the record, we're here in Middle Temple in the if you like, the oldest kind of echelons or sort of annals of legal, the legal establishment in the UK.
And how ironic that we're talking about completely changing the model.
Well, indeed. It feels
wrong.
Yeah, but in a sort of a good way. But do you think there's, you know, this all of this sort of this change that's going on? I mean, this is not just about changing regulations, is it? I mean, this is about changing what the market is wanting, what customers are, you know, wanting. I mean, is there any broader lessons for business in general out of the book that you've written, that you've learned, and that you've, in your discussions with different people? Do you think
the biggest one is well, obviously, you know, efficiency and driving efficiency to the extent possible to keep your costs down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that to me, I mean, is that the lower my costs, the more money I keep. So from a business perspective, that just makes perfect sense.
Sure.
You know, law firms haven't quite grasped that concept yet. They focus more on revenue rather than the cost side, unless they just, you know, slosh things out in bad economies. But I mean, the other focus of the BFC firm is it's very client-centric. The lawyers are very focused on their clients and do a lot of client visits. There's a lot of interaction, which, again, for general business purposes, is client-centric. Get to know your clients. And you know, nothing terribly earth-shattering about that.
But, no, not at all.
But it's something that bears repeating over and over again, because it's easy to forget that when you get busy and not...
So, I mean, what was interesting, because we... I attended an event where you spoke and talked about the book, and there were some other people on the panel, and one of the people on the panel was a person who was general counsel for a large firm, and she was talking about the difference between what you know, you talk about that being becoming more customer focused or client centric. And she was saying the differing levels of how people tell us. Her question was, tell us how you're going to value add, or how you're going to add value, and the differences in response. She said was quite astounding, and I think that is That's probably going to be one of the biggest challenges, isn't it, in terms of orientation? Is like, where are you pointed? Are you pointing towards it's for the partners and for the firm and the staff's going to benefit, or are you pointed out the way and you are client facing or you are customer facing? Mm-hmm. And it's getting that sort of culture and that ethos and that sort of attitude to service and things. That's possibly going to be the biggest kind of challenge for many firms, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, partners tend to think of their clients as their own as opposed to the firms. And so that is a big cultural shift too. In the BFC model is the sum is bigger than the parts.
Sure.
The firm, lawyers go to the firm because of the process and the environment and so on. Clients go to the firm because of process, quality, and everything. So that the more that a BFC model or a law firm can embed itself with the clients, the less likely is that when a partner leaves that that client's going to go with them, because they're going to become embedded. It's going to be almost seamless between the client and the firm, and the firm knows exactly what the client wants. You don't have to ask the question like Julie asked, you know, on their procurement request for proposal, what value add are you going to give me? And then the responses, as you said, were quite varied. Some people said, well, what do you mean by that?
What do you mean?
And well, if you have to ask that question, then you're clearly not the right firm for us.
Yes.
So you want to have that seamless connection that you know, because you're there, you're talking with them every day of the week or at least a few times a week, and you're going to visit them and you're working there, etc. So
it's about, I mean, it becomes less about individual kind of relationships with clients.
Absolutely.
And becomes about more firm-wide relationships.
Institutional relationships, correct.
So whilst one person can be important in that, they're not essential, as it were. They're still there. There's continuity, I guess, in the way. So, which is great for managing risk, managing relationships, and over the long term, I guess. Mm-hmm. But also, I guess it's as you talked about in the book, one of the key things about sort of the BFC firm that you talked about in the book was about knowledge management and the transparency how professional development and knowledge management and transparency of process and pricing and all of those different sort of things. And I guess that's something that's going to build that sort of that whole firm sort of model and break down the barriers, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I mean, it also helps with the client continuity. When you have a knowledge management system that the client is fully plugged into,
mm-hmm.
and you have professional development programs that the client is fully plugged into,
mm-hmm.
and you can show, you know, through legal project management and Gantt charts, you can show year over year improvement on the same sorts of things that you've done. That really impresses clients. And, you know, it's to me, it's just kind of basic common sense,
mm-hmm.
but it, you don't see a lot of that, unfortunately, with law firms.
So I have three questions to which I think there's probably three different sort of sets of stakeholders,
mm-hmm.
in this. And I think there are future lawyers, i.e. people that are studying law and
mm-hmm.
thinking about the future and seeing all these changes and thinking, blimey, what next? I think there are people that buy legal services, whether they're general counsel or just firms in general. And I think there are the existing law firms that exist in the market and playing the market. Now, if I was to press you for one top line piece of advice for each of those kind of groups, what would it be? Put you on the spot now.
Okay, well, fair enough. The law students, what I tell the law students is don't panic. There is always going to be a place for you in the legal services industry. And I use the word industry as opposed to profession,
mm-hmm.
because the industry is composed of a lot of players, including the legal profession.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are actually more avenues. In my mind, there are more avenues available for law grads now than there were 20 years ago when I came out.
Okay.
You know, when I came out, your road was become a lawyer, make partner, that's it.
You're up or out, sort of thing.
You're up or out. And then, God forbid, if you're out, good luck to you. Right? Now, you know, with legal tech and LPOs and all sorts of different permutations out there, Riverview Law being another great example, there are all sorts of roles that you can play within the legal services industry that you don't necessarily have to be practicing law.
Right.
So that, to me, is fantastic.
It's
a great opportunity. So keep calm, carry on, you know, don't worry about it. clients, I think in the UK, they're a lot more aggressive than you are in Canada in terms of the general counsel. The general counsel in Canada tend to grumble a lot and not really do too much about it, with few exceptions. And so my advice to general counsel is be much more aggressive. Be much more aggressive, but also be focused on exactly what you want, right? Okay. Figure out what your role is with your organization, what your core value add is. Mm-hmm. Focus on that and say, everything else, how can I deal with it? Do I need more in-house people? Maybe I don't have the budget for that. Do I send that outside to a law firm? Do I send it to someone else, another legal services provider? And if I do that, what are the parameters they're going to work in and what is going to be the budgetary restrictions?
Okay.
And current law firms, good luck to you. whether you like it or not, change is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't see it, that's troubling to me, because there's certainly enough examples out there of new players and new changes to the marketplace. The playing field is changing. Get out of the bleachers. Be part of the process, because you run the danger of finally getting around to getting on the playing field, and the playing field has changed so radically that you're out of business.
Yeah,
so,
the rules have changed.
Perhaps. Yeah, you got to be part. You got to be part of the change. Don't sit back.
You got to get involved in the conversation, I guess.
Right.
That's brilliant. So I always finish these conversations with one question, and that question is: is there anything that you'd like to shamelessly plug
besides my book?
You can plug your book if you like, but is there anything else besides this book?
Yeah, well, Riverview Law has been very good about bringing me over to speak in the UK. So it's a shameless plug for them. Great outfit, great group of people. But please buy the book. It's easy to read. It's not that expensive. Available on Amazon. For those of you in the UK, it's also available at Blackwell's, but Amazon has it, and I hope you enjoy reading it.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Mitch. And I will make sure that all gets all linked up in the write-up in the post and let you know when it goes live, and hopefully we'll help you sell a few books.
Great.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Richard. Cheers.